We'll discuss reducing poverty levels in the United States and Wisconsin this hour, and our guest will recommend five policies that would cut poverty in half. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, April 2nd. We'll recommend your questions and reactions to the ideas that are laid out in the new report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Throughout the hour, we'll be discussing raising the minimum wage, transitional jobs programs, reforming tax credits, and strengthening child care funding. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions about all of those policies. Our guest is David Reamer, a senior fellow at the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute in Milwaukee. They recently released a report entitled Working Our Way Out of Poverty, which details these five policies to cut poverty in half. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be on your show again.
Yes, it's good to have you back. Before we go into the solutions, let's go into the problem. How big of a problem is poverty at this point in time?
Well, it's very big. Our estimate that was developed by the Urban Institute indicated that in 2010, which was the year we looked at the data, about 45 million Americans were below the poverty line. They estimated that was about just under 15% of the American population. And they used a more realistic poverty line. They counted all resources, not just cash, but benefits that are provided, like food stamps and the Earned Income Tax Credit. And they also made adjustments for the fact that across the country, for example, housing costs are quite different from, say, rural Wisconsin to lower Manhattan or San Francisco. And the fact that some people have health insurance and some people don't. But even with this more realistic measure, 45 million Americans, about 15% of the entire country.
Yeah. And I know that this is taking a look at the nation, but would it be safe to assume that in Wisconsin we also have 15% of our population below the poverty level?
It's a little bit lower. And in fact, a couple of years ago, we did an analysis of Wisconsin. And in fact, it's significantly lower. Our baseline, and this was for the year 2008, was about 8%. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because historically we've had a bigger middle class. I know there's a big debate about what's happening to the middle class in this state, but historically that was true, and we still have pretty big middle class compared to some other places, think of Mississippi or Alabama or Texas or places like that. Another reason is that we have some programs that help especially low-income workers that other states don't have. So, for example, we have our own supplemental earned income tax credit, and we provide child care already for people up to 200% of the poverty line. So our starting point in Wisconsin was about 8%, significantly less than the rest of the country. We did the same analysis back then using pretty much the same policy package based on work and showed that, again, you could cut poverty by more than half.
Yeah. So why did you take on this this issue? Why did you issue Working Our Way Out of Poverty, the report that you recently released?
Well, it was partly because when we came out with our report back in 2008 that showed that you could just dramatically cut poverty in Wisconsin, the question naturally arose, well, was that a fluke? Is Wisconsin an aberration? Can you solve the problem in this state, but maybe not in the rest of the country? So in the intervening years, a couple of things have happened. One is that just apart from us, the issue of poverty has really risen closer to the top of the national agenda. Traditionally, it was something that people more on the left of the political spectrum would talk about, but we've seen, for example, Representative Paul Ryan, conservative Republican from Janesville, talking about poverty. It's become a bigger issue. And And then we also worked with two groups elsewhere, one group of religious organizations in New York City that did an analysis of a similar policy package, again, largely based on work, attempting to show how you could cut poverty in New York City by half. And their model, very similar to ours, showed that, in fact, you could do that. You could reduce poverty in New York City dramatically by more than half. And then just a few weeks ago, a national organization called the Children's Defense Fund, using a model, again, similar to ours, a little more different, focused on children, showed how you could cut child poverty in the country by 60%. So that, I think, kind of confirmed to us that the Wisconsin model, the Wisconsin analysis, wasn't an aberration. We wanted to be sure, so we again hired the Urban Institute to use their very sophisticated, totally objective modeling methodology and apply it to our original policy package with just a few changes and to the whole country, not just children, but everybody. And once again, if you put together a policy package largely based on work, on making jobs available, making work pay, reducing obstacles to work, you can cut poverty in half. And I think it's really important not so much to focus on the number, whether it's half or 55% or 58%, but to just drive home the point that we're not stuck with poverty. We don't have to have 45 million Americans poor. We don't have to have 15% of the people of the country poor. If we do a small number of policy changes that are based in our common belief in work and policies that are frankly out there already, we have transitional jobs programs all across the country. We have earned income tax credit expansions in various states. If we just take these work-based policies that we're pretty familiar with and do them in the right way and to scale, we can dramatically cut poverty. It can be in middle to low single digits.
Yeah. Well, what are the five policies? Just the headlines first, and then we'll go into each into a little more depth.
Sure. Well, the first one is transitional jobs. We need to make work available for people who can't find a job. In the country as a whole, there are about, I just looked at the data the other day, there are about 9 million unemployed job seekers. This is the most narrow category of unemployed people. And about half as many jobs available, around somewhat more than half, but around 4.5 million jobs. So even if every single job were filled, just magically, miraculously, you would have still half of the people who are looking for work unable to find a job. There just aren't enough jobs. That doesn't mean that at times there are, it doesn't mean that we're always with a job shortage. There have been times when the number of unemployed job seekers roughly equals the number of job vacancies. But for the last several years, there have been far more people looking for work than we have jobs. So transitional jobs are simply a tool that says, all right, if you look for a job and you want to work, you don't want to be on welfare, you don't want to get in trouble, you want to be working for your money, let's find work for you to do on a temporary basis until you can find a permanent, unsubsidized job in the regular economy.
Yeah, but if the jobs aren't available for people, where are these transitional jobs?
Well, we have to create them, and we've actually had a lot of experience in Wisconsin with the transitional jobs program. And interestingly, Joy, in this state, it's been supported by both Democrats and Republicans. This was a program that actually started in the prior administration. And Governor Walker and Speaker Voss and others in the legislature when the Republicans took over were initially quite skeptical. But they looked more carefully at it, and skepticism changed to support and even enthusiasm because people realized that work is better than being idle or being on welfare. And secondly, the way the program is set up in Wisconsin, it actually helps, in some cases, small private employers create new jobs, actually create new jobs. They use these subsidized workers to test whether if they added a position at their own cost, they could actually justify keeping that person in that unsubsidized job to be. and they sometimes it doesn't work, but there's small firms all over the state that use transitional jobs, realize that if they hired that worker on their own dime, they could make a go of it, and then very often hired that same person, taking them off the subsidy. So it's been a very successful program in this state, and in both, you know, so-called blue and red states. It's popular in California. There was a big program in Mississippi. So it's on a small scale, this program has worked quite well.
We will talk about the other policies that are recommended in the report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty, after we check the latest news. We're talking about five policies that may reduce poverty, cut poverty in half in the United States. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a senior fellow at the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute in Milwaukee, David Reamer, about the recently released report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty, which details five policies that are designed to cut the poverty rate in the United States in half. And we are welcoming your questions, your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, before we continue talking about the five different policies, let's take some questions and experiences from our callers. Nick in Milwaukee is with us first. Hi, Nick.
Hello. I just want to say I have a college degree. My wife works. We both work, and I work in the profession that I went to school for, and we're on the borderline of poverty. And even once in a while, we still have to go to a pantry. We still have to get assistance here and there. And I think the reality of it is it comes down to wages, and I put this one on the business owners and the corporations. Everybody that's been working in this generation knows that insurance rates have go up every year, and corporations have been keeping wages the same, if not lowering them. It's like, oh, if we can get people to work for this amount of money, we'll do it. And they call that competitive wages, and it's fat. And in our state, it seems that we've been attacking labor and people that work and try and take things away from them to put them in this position where they're working for these low wages, and all the expenditures now have been put on the employee. An example, when you used to go to a job, let's say if you wanted to be a police officer, they used to pay for you to go through the academy when they hired you or they trained you. Now they want you to go to a technical school and do all these things and pay. They put that expense on the employee rather than pay for that schooling themselves, and it's ridiculous. It's top heavy. It's all on the employee now.
Lots to talk about here. David Reamer, first, here Nick says he and his wife are both working, but still have to go to the food pantry. Your reaction?
Well, that's exactly why we have two of the other policies in our policy package. It's a perfect cue for talking about the next elements of this policy package, because we need not only to make jobs available, we need to make work pay. So two of the policies we proposed are to increase the minimum wage and then to also increase the earned income tax credit so that it provides a much bigger earning supplement for people who don't have children, also increases the supplement for those who do, and this may be particularly relevant to Nick's situation, to get rid of the marriage penalty in the EITC so that he and his wife don't feel pressure from the tax system, from the way the EITC is structured and other elements in the tax system, to ever consider getting divorced if that's something they don't want to do. There's a problem with the EITC that tends to punish marriage.
I'm sorry, what is the EITC?
The EITC is the Earned Income Tax Credit.
And so there is a marriage penalty with that tax credit.
Yeah, and that everyone agrees that should be gotten rid of. There's broad agreement across the board. So this isn't to say that a lot of other things need to be done. I certainly favor going beyond these two policies that I mentioned, stronger labor unions, I think, is important. Investing in education is important. Healthcare is important. We need to do a lot of things to build and rebuild the middle class. But for the purposes of our model, we focused on the basics. We assumed that the minimum wage should be increased to the equivalent of $10.10 an hour. And then we provided a much bigger earned income tax credit, EITC, particularly for people who don't have children, and also increased it for those who do. So these two policies were kind of the second leg of our four-legged stool, making work pay. We also, the third leg was the idea of having affordable child care. Now, luckily, in Wisconsin, we have a very good program. It was adopted on a bipartisan basis during the administration of Governor Tommy Thompson, but not every state has that. So in this model that we did, we asked the Urban Institute to assume that every state had a sliding scale affordable child care program so that people who want to work, who have found a job, can afford to put their children in safe child care until the kids get to be of school age. And then the fifth policy is just to recognize that there are some people who, because of a disability or because they've worked their whole life and have retired on Social Security, are relying primarily on disability income or retirement income. We're not talking about people who are gaming the system or fudging anything. We're talking about people with very serious disabilities, as well as people who've, again, qualified for Social Security by virtue of working. In some cases, they remain poor. So we have the fourth leg of our stool is to simply provide a tax credit, a very non-bureaucratic solution to just boost their income. And what we found was that if you put these policies together and you test them using this very objective methodology that the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. has developed, that you can cut the poverty rate by 50% or 58%, kind of depending on the number of people who choose to work in a transitional job.
Okay, so there are the five policies that are recommended in the report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty: transitional jobs program, increasing the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour and indexing it to inflation, reforming the earned income tax credit, strengthening child care funding, and enact a secure retirement and disability income tax credit. So what do you think of this plan? What other ideas might you have? What questions do you have or experiences would you like to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Matt in Menominee is with us now. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. David, I was thinking I have a more radical idea. Why don't we just eliminate all income tax for, like, everybody? Just let them keep their own money. I forgot to tell Christy that, or Kayla, whoever the screener was. That's a pretty good idea. I gave about $15,000 of my income in some way, shape, or form to the government. And then my other point was going to be, if you've ever been to northern Wisconsin, like, we just shut down the opportunity for a couple hundred jobs for the mine up there in Hurley, Iron County area, which is how that area got its start in the first place. But we decided that we wanted to keep paying minimum wage jobs as tourist traps and little stores that sell, you know, little gift shop stuff. And then, so if you've ever been up there, you would know how hard it is to create jobs up there out of nothing. If you don't work for the DNR or the public school system up there or some other sort of government highway department, you don't really have any jobs up there. I think that was it. Oh, and then also the key to poverty in my mind is two parent homes, like whether it's two incomes or just a mom and a dad. And I just figured that's kind of the key to poverty more than anything, because we have so many single mothers on welfare and badger care and different things, and dads that aren't dads. They may pay child support. That might be it. But
all right. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I appreciate all those points. Of course, we just heard from a caller who is married, and they were having problems as well, making ends meet. But three big points there. Let's talk a little bit first about well, I mean, eliminating the income tax, let people keep more of their own money. He says that would help people who are in poverty. What about that, David Reamer?
Well, it's particularly interesting to talk about this in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, under Bob La Follette, a Republican, progressive Republican, was the champion of the income tax, both at the state level and the federal level. I mean, the fundamental question, Joy, is what do we want government to do? What costs of government require taxation? And then when we come to the conclusion that in order to have an Army, a Navy, an Air Force, a Marine, public health, and many things that we actually want government to do that do have a cost that we can't get, you know, from user fees, how do we raise the money? There's a lot of people who want to put in place more regressive taxes that put a higher tax burden on the poor and working people. The income tax, I think, is a pretty good tax. I think that we should get rid of a lot of the loopholes in it that result in undermining its purpose of having people pay more as their income rises. I basically don't think that getting rid of the income tax is a starter. It would probably require us to shut down half of the federal government, and we would not be able to have a strong military. We would be at risk of our ability to protect people from all kinds of public health hazards. So I think that the focus should be not on getting rid of the income tax, but figuring out how to simplify and, if possible, lower the cost of what government does so we don't have to raise taxes as high.
Yeah,
and get rid of the loopholes and complexity in the income tax system.
How much would this plan, the five different policies that you're recommending, cost?
Well, we asked the Urban Institute to answer that question because we didn't want to in any way hide it. Their estimate is that it would have cost about $332 billion for the whole country if it had been in place in 2010. It's a lot of money. But we also, as you can see from our report, which is online on our website at Community Advocates Public Policy Institute, it's only about 2% of GDP. It's about 6% of all government spending. Sometimes when we talk about these policies, people imagine that it's going to double the cost of government or be equal to 50% of what we spend or some really outrageous figure. But it's a fairly small amount in the scheme of things, and I think could be paid for by getting rid of expenditures that are not justified, all kinds of subsidies that distort the market, tax breaks that don't help at all. If anything, again, undermine the productivity of the economy. Talking about loopholes and giveaways that are completely unjustified. They're only there because of high paid lobbyists sort of paying members of Congress big campaign fees. So I think if we did something that of this nature, it would be an expenditure that makes sense instead of other kinds of spending that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and did you mention how much money might be saved on social welfare programs that are designed by implementing these steps?
Well, we were able to get from the Urban Institute estimates of some of those savings, and I'll just mention a few of them. This would cut the cost of the food stamp program by 15%. It would cut the primary welfare program called TANF, W-2 in Wisconsin, by 17%. It would cut housing subsidies by 7%. And there were a number of things that they couldn't estimate, but a lot of people who have looked at this feel that there would be reductions in criminal justice costs and improvements in health outcomes. Well, one other thing I just want to mention in reference to the prior speaker, Matt, he talked a lot about the importance of marriage. And as I mentioned earlier, we really do need to get rid of obstacles to marriage that are in our tax system. It's one of the reasons why we proposed a redesign of the earned income tax credit. Obviously, people shouldn't be forced to be married. We're hopefully beyond that era. On the other hand, people who want to get married and who want to stay married shouldn't have the government working against them, shouldn't be punishing them by higher tax rates. So that's one reason why we did this. There's also some evidence out there based on a program similar for this model that ran in Milwaukee in the 90s called the New Hope Project, that if you make work available and make work pay, that you may indeed see an increase in the marriage rate. The New Hope Project provided what we now call transitional jobs, and it increased the earned income tax credit equivalent. It didn't do some of the other things were proposed here, but even then, it almost doubled the rate of marriage. That is, they had a control group and an experimental group. The control group had a 12% marriage rate after the program was wrapping up. The experimental group had a 21% rate of marriage. And as far as we can tell, I'm interested if there's any evidence otherwise, this is about the only program, this only model for increasing, that they actually didn't intend to increase the marriage rate. It just did, and dramatically. A lot of the programs that kind of wag their fingers at people and say, you ought to get married, have no effect whatsoever. So we've asked a lot of people, well, why is this? And the answer that we often get is that, and of course they were looking just then at traditional marriages, of, you know, between a man and a woman. But the answer is that, according to some people, that when people who are thinking about getting married look at each other, one of the things they look at is my partner going to be a dependable breadwinner? Are they going to be someone who's going to consistently bring home wages from work and be able to contribute to the family? And if the answer to that is yes, I think so, people are more inclined to go down to the county courthouse or go to their local minister or whoever and get married.
Yeah. So what we want to do is... Yeah, David Reamer, we're coming up on a news break, and there was one other major point that Matt made that I want to get to before news, and that is you can't just say create jobs. He's upset because the jobs that may have come with that iron ore mine that is now not a project anymore in northern Wisconsin are no longer going to be there, and was saying, you know, what are the people in poverty in northern Wisconsin supposed to do?
Well, I think we do need to make investments that help pockets of poverty, whether they're urban or rural. I think that part of it is to have transitional jobs that build the infrastructure and that help small, struggling private businesses take a go at it. There are other things that can be done, investing in technical education, investing in higher education, looking at ways to work with the natural bounty, God's great gift to Wisconsin of lakes, water, timber, and yes, metals, and find ways to develop them, but in a way that's environmentally sustainable, that doesn't poison the water, doesn't rip up the tourist industry as part of the goal. I have a kind of some personal experience in this area. I didn't grow up in northern Wisconsin, but my mother's family grew up in a coal mining region in northeastern Pennsylvania. And you go back there, it was once a very wealthy area. People who didn't even live there took the coal out of the land and left a lot of those communities with slag heaps that dripped poisonous and dangerous substances into their water. There's one town not far from where my mother grew up where literally the town was on fire and had to be moved. So the idea that that mining, whether it's iron ore or coal or anything else, is somehow a panacea, I think is a fantasy. That's not that we shouldn't do mining, but we have to be very, very careful about it. Otherwise, we're going to end up with poison water and slag heaps and a legacy that degrades the state in ways that we'll regret for decades to come.
Let us check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about working our way out of poverty. A report from our guests' group, Community Advocates Public Policy Institute in Milwaukee, which details five policies that would cut the nation's poverty rate in half. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are discussing how to reduce poverty levels in the United States. Our guest is recommending five policies that would cut poverty in half. And we are welcoming any questions you might have, reactions to the ideas that were laid out in the recent report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. As we have been discussing, the report recommends transitional jobs programs, raising the minimum wage, reforming tax credits, and strengthening child care funding. And we welcome, again, your thoughts or ideas as well. David Reamer is our guest, a senior fellow at the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute in Milwaukee. And we have many other callers, so let's go to Gary and Merrill next. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. Good ideas from your guest. I would say that I just read yesterday that Wisconsin is the leading state losing middle-class jobs. Of all the 50 states, Wisconsin is the top state. And I'm sure the governor is getting a lot of pats on the head for that. Another issue with this international trade, I think all the presidents for the last 30 years and Congress has been, they've just been traitors to the American people. I'll just give you an example, Apple Computer. They've got like 800,000 people making their phones and whatnot overseas. They ship in, no import taxes, no duties to pay, just distribute them any place they want. And they keep all their profits offshore. And I think as long as those policies are in effect, I think we're doomed.
Yeah. Well, David Reamer, are all the jobs overseas?
Well, I think this area of international trade is a very complex one, and I'm far from an expert in it. The idea, one of the ideas that the caller mentioned of making sure that when profits are made, they don't get parked and hidden overseas, makes a lot of sense to me. Even if we did that, however, I think we have to recognize that we are now in a very competitive world that we weren't used to in the 50s and 60s. In some ways, the time that I grew up in, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, was a real aberration in world history. We had emerged from the Second World War as this dominant power. The other victors in that war were a mess. The Soviet Union had a completely failing economic system. Britain was messed up. Our opponents, Germany and Japan, were totally destroyed. And so there was a period where basically the American economy was more or less the world economy. We dominated everything. And ironically, because of the war and because of the investments that had been made in the New Deal, our productivity, our infrastructure was much better than that of everybody else. So of course, another thing that was important during this era was that labor unions were strong and they were getting good wages and good benefits. We were building the middle class, partly because of some things that we did, partly because our competition was just flat on its back. That wasn't going to last forever. It was just inevitable that Europe would get back on its feet, Japan, now China. This is a natural level of competition. So I think we need to do a lot of things to figure out how to compete. Yeah. Certainly part of the solution is to make sure that the rules of international trade are fair and the tax policy is fair to us, to Americans. But I think we also have to focus on what we can do that's not dependent on nudging or pushing other nations to change their ways. We have to focus on our own investment in ourselves, making sure that we're a healthy society, investing in our health care, making sure that we have an educated population. Increasingly, economic success is not dependent on natural resources only, but on the most important natural resource, which is the brains and the creativity of the American people. We hurt that ability to be productive and if we undercut education. So I think we need to have a good hard look at what we can do to improve our productivity, rebuild the middle class, even as we fight maybe a little harder for fairer rules of international trade and better rules of taxation.
Yeah, you know, our caller brought up that that the middle class has shrunk more in Wisconsin, or has Wisconsin has seen the biggest decline of any state. And you did mention that earlier in the program, but can you briefly tell us why you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is that a lot of our middle class in Wisconsin was linked to manufacturing, and as manufacturing has declined as a share of our population, and as union membership has declined, I think we're seeing a decline in the middle class. But part of it, frankly, is that we have been putting our money in some of the wrong places. We have not been investing enough in education. We've been spending too much time giving small little tax breaks, mostly that go to high-income people that who don't put that money back in Wisconsin. I think another very serious mistake we've made is the failure to take full advantage of the Affordable Care Act and expand Badger Care all the way up to 133% of the poverty line. I'm sure you've discussed this in other settings, but basically we are overtaxing the people of Wisconsin by hundreds of millions of dollars by failing to take advantage of bringing our tax dollars back from Washington to Wisconsin. It would be an improvement in health. It would cut our taxes. This is something supported by the Hospital Association and many people in business. And the governor and the legislature's refusal to do this, based on fairly bogus notions about you can't trust the federal government, just don't make any sense. Many, many other red states with very conservative governors and legislatures have decided to get their money back. We should be doing that. That would free up money that we could use to not cut the University of Wisconsin, money that we could put into health and have a healthier, more educated, more competitive Wisconsin, yeah, and help rebuild the middle class.
New unemployment numbers out have another disturbing headline showing that Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee, has the highest black unemployment rate in the nation. 19.9% black unemployment in Milwaukee. The unemployment for whites in Milwaukee, 5%. What can we do about that?
Well, part of that, I suspect, is still some racial discrimination that's going on, so we need to keep paying attention to that. Part of it, I think, is the transportation system that makes it really hard for an awful lot of African Americans who live in the central city to get to the jobs that are more in the suburban, fringe of the city. You know, we spend billions of dollars on widening lanes, even when traffic is declining, putting in more concrete, not just within the city, but all over the metropolitan area, not putting money into transit, not putting money into fixing potholes, which would, among other things, help create jobs. So I think getting our transportation policies unscrewed up, putting the money where it should be spent rather than in this sort of mindless building of concrete all over the place, which pushes jobs further and further away from people. It's actually an unemployment policy. Our transportation policy in Wisconsin is an unemployment policy, increasing unemployment. So we should reverse that. And then we need to keep working on fixing education. That's a whole long, complex subject. But I do think that in the short run, what we talk about in our policy package, working our way out of poverty, is a big part of the solution. The overwhelming majority, the reason why you see that 19% unemployment rate, those are people who want to work. These are not people who are sitting around doing nothing. To be counted as unemployed, you have to be actively seeking work. There's probably another 10 or 15% of people who want work, would work if they had a shot at it, but have just given up. So I think the real unemployment rate's higher. We've got to create jobs and put these folks to work, at least offer them the chance to work, and increasingly do it for small for-profit companies that would be then adding jobs and increasing payrolls. Yeah. It's a complicated subject. I think our working our way out of poverty policy package is a big part of the solution, but we do need solutions that extend to reversing our transportation misplaced priorities, to getting our money back from Washington that we're letting sit out there, that would free up hundreds of millions of dollars we could invest in education. A lot of these things come together into what you might call a package of packages to help rebuild the middle class.
So how optimistic are you that these policies would be implemented?
Well, I think in the short run, we're not going to see some sort of single mega bill enacted in Washington to put all these policy packages into place at once. But as you can see from the last page of our report, every one of these policies is being implemented on a small scale at the state or local level. We have transitional jobs programs, I think, in about 22 states. Many states and even cities have raised the minimum wage. We have an awful lot of states, including Wisconsin, that have basically increased the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, by creating a supplemental tax credit. Many states have subsidized child care, and many states provide special tax credits for seniors and people with disabilities. So each one of these policies is percolating out there across the country. The challenge is to keep building a bigger set of these policies and ultimately bring it to the national level. The metaphor that I like to use, Joy, is that if you were aiming to build a house, you wouldn't just go to the hardware store and grab some nails and some bricks and cement and just start building. The first thing you do is hire an architect, come up with a plan, with a model. And then even if it took you years to build the house, even if you just did the first few rooms on the ground floor and then added a second floor later and then added another room on the side, you'd be building to the plan so that when you finally finished the work, you'd have something that didn't fall down, that made sense, that accomplished your purposes. That's the purpose of this report, yeah. To lay out the blueprint to show us where we need to go.
Thank you very much for being with us. David Reamer, Senior Fellow at the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute in Milwaukee, talking about the report, Working Our Way Out of Poverty. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.